forth, or their kids are enrolled within your schools in their region.
It's A-10 sports. Both the Bucks and Bulls had the night off last night. Both teams are back in action this evening. Milwaukee hosts Detroit, and Phoenix is in Chicago. The WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service. More showers and possibly a thunderstorm today and tonight. A high around 52, an overnight low of 39. Breezy throughout. The five-day weather trend calls for dry weather with highs hovering around 50. Right now, with some light rain showers in the area, we have a temperature reading of 50. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The morning show with Greg Berg is coming up. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to have an exciting time today, I think, on the program because we are talking about essentially two world premieres. A little bit later in the hour, I'm going to be speaking via the telephone with Rachel Swartz, who is with the theater faculty at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. And we're going to be talking about the latest installment in their Fresh Ink series, which is in some respects sort of a counterpart to the new play initiative at Carthage College. The Fresh Ink series, at least at the moment, focuses on musicals and musical theater. And a brand new musical called Burn, the musical, is going to be presented this coming weekend. It's actually Burn, the folk musical. And we'll be speaking with Rachel Swartz, who is directing the production, in part two of today's program. Part one, however, involves a world premiere in which I am personally involved over at Carthage College, where I'm an associate professor of music and coordinator of the opera workshop. And the fall workshop at Carthage College is going to be presenting a performance this Saturday evening, which will consist in part one of some operatic scenes and arias, and in part two, the world premiere of a brand new chamber opera that I've composed called Courageous Rose, a story of student resistors in the time of Hitler, based on the true story of a group of medical students in Munich who called themselves the White Rose and were among the first organized resistance groups against Hitler and the Third Reich. I'm really happy to have with me in the studios for this first part of today's morning show, first of all, Lily Lurigan, who is a junior theater major and Chinese minor at Carthage, and also Adam Blackwood, who is a senior music and business management double major. And they are both in the cast for Courageous Rose and are here to talk about that and other matters related to opera performance. Lily Lurigan and Adam Blackwood, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Appreciate you getting up bright and early on this Wednesday morning. Before we get to the work, I want to talk with each of you about kind of your background in terms of opera, and it's two really different stories, so I think that's pretty cool. Adam, I want to talk with you first because you're the grizzled veteran of the two of you in terms of having some involvement with opera. Tell us a little bit, first of all, about just kind of your life on stage, even back in your high school days in Franklin, and then how opera kind of entered the mix when you got to Carthage.
Yeah, so my acting and theater career began when I, in sophomore year in high school, I saw a production of Disney's The Little Mermaid at Divine Savior Holy Angels High School. And I was very moved by that performance, and that kind of kick-started an interest to participate in theater. And so over the summer, DSHA has this community theater program that they do. And they were interested in doing Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And considering that was one of my favorite movies growing up, I was really interested in playing in that show. And so when I auditioned, I got the role of Grandpa Joe. And that was a very fun experience. So that kind of wanted me to do more. And so when the school year began, this is junior year, I was cast as the ensemble in Les Miserables. And then in the spring, I was casted as Specs in Newsies. And then over the summer, again, DSHA did a show of Newsies, and I was cast as Spot Conlon in that show. And then in the fall of senior year, I was cast in the ensemble as in the show Beauty and the Beast. And then in the spring, unfortunately, you know, that was 2020, the year that the world kind of stood still, I was cast in Fiddler on the Roof. But of course, you know, we know what happened afterwards. So, and then kind of transitioning into college, I guess the pandemic kind of somewhat killed my interest in theater. I still like appreciate the art and all the work that's put into it. I kind of wanted to focus more on just music as a concept more. But then I found Opera Workshop, and it felt kind of like a small little spark in my young theater days, kind of growing back a little bit. And so I think this is, what, the fourth show that I've been a part of now?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is now the fourth Opera Workshop that I've been a part of, and I've been having a really good time with that.
We should mention to our listeners that in addition to being part of Opera Workshop and a valued member of the Carthage Choir, that you are also yourself a composer, have done some really interesting things. Just briefly describe those exploits.
Yeah, so I mean, I would use the term composer very loosely. I just like to I like to write some songs, and I've played a couple gigs here and there with a goal and pursuing a potential job in the music industry at some point. So, yeah.
Very good. Well, you are a bit modest, but so Adam Blackwood, who is a part of this world premiere coming up on Saturday night, and also with us Lily Lurigan, who is a theater major at Carthage, a native of Kenosha. You went to, I think you said, Bullen Middle School and then Harborside. But back then, in your high school days, cello was what engaged you more than anything, correct?
Yes, correct.
And not so much theater.
Not so much, no. Since the third grade, I wanted to play the cello. I started up then, and that went on all the way until my freshman year of college. And then I took a intro to acting class during our J term, which is just a month-long class, and kind of fell in love with it and found my new passion for acting there. And my sophomore year of college, I switched my major to theater, and it's been great ever since.
Right. You were telling me that rather rapidly after that switch, you found yourself on stage at Carthage. I mean, again and again and again, right?
That's right. My first year fully studying theater, I was casted into three plays. So that was kind of reassurance for me that I was doing the right thing.
Right. And tell our listeners about those different shows. It sounds like you've been in some intriguing productions.
For sure, in all different types of roles as well. For Antigone by Sophocles, I played chorus leader, which is an old woman, which is really, really fun to play. Mm-hmm. My second play, I played the lead. Her name was Jo in the play FML, How Carson McCullers Saved My Life by Sarah Gubbins. That one was really interesting and completely different from chorus leader. So it was really fun to play the different roles there. And the most recent one that I've been in is I and You by Lauren Gunderson. And that one was really fun as well because it was a really intimate play. It was only two characters, so I was able to really get into it.
Very good. So tell us about stumbling your way into Opera Workshop, of all things. How did that happen?
So Opera Workshop is actually one of the required courses that I could take for my theater performance major. I was either taking Opera Workshop or the Musical Theater Workshop, and I thought, why not try opera? I've never done anything like it before. I've never had any type of singing experience or anything like that, and just put myself into it and ended up being my favorite class, actually.
Wow. Well, I know you're just saying that to get an A, but I appreciate you saying it nevertheless. No, I mean, in all honesty, I think that's so cool that you did that because in many respects, when you go to a liberal arts college, that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. But it seems like it's less and less about that, about kind of taking a plunge into something brand new. It's more and more seems to be, you know, you have this goal at the end and you're focused on it with blinders and so on.
Right.
And so you were really, in a sense, experiencing the liberal arts in the deepest sense of the word by just trying something for the heck of it.
That's right.
And you're glad you did. That's great. So for our listeners, I've already touched a little bit on this story, this real life story of these college students in Munich during World War II who fought against Hitler. But let's find out a little bit about who you play. And let's begin actually with you, Lily, because you can maybe explain the framework within which this story is crafted and the important part that you play.
For sure. So the character that I play is a tourist of Munich, and the opera is kind of told through my reading, I would say. I am reading a book about Hans and Sophie Scholl, and what I am reading is basically presented on the stage. We navigate through the lives and how much it took them to get to where they were, and at the end, it comes back to me after I close the book and finish reading, and it's a beautiful moment at the end, for sure.
One of the things I thought you could maybe mention is a change that's been made in the production, and this change was made at the suggestion of Doug Instanis, who's been on this program many, many times, the artistic and managing director of the Racine Theater Guild, and his wife Kim is on the theater faculty at Carthage. And Doug came and watched an early rehearsal, and he had a really interesting and significant suggestion. Explain what that is, because it really impacted you.
Yes, it definitely made a difference. So in the early rehearsals, we would have me just kind of on the side in my own little space reading to myself. And when Doug Instanis came in and suggested this, that I involve myself a little more on the action in the stage, it kind of opened a new door for me. And I was really able to express how I felt about what was being presented on stage, kind of expressing, trying to see it for the first time, like as if I was reading it, but seeing it because it's an opera.
Right. So it's like you are in the room with
exactly.
These young students, for instance, and mm-hmm. and your reaction to what's going on can be even more visceral. And of course, they don't see you. As far as they're concerned, you aren't really there. But
right.
as far as you're concerned, you really are.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm so glad Doug made that suggestion. It's a very, very powerful improvement on everything. Adam Blackwood, tell our listeners about the character whom you portray.
Yeah, so as Lily mentioned earlier, this whole story is about Hans Scholl, and I am playing Hans in this production. And the story goes that Hans, in his earlier years as a youngster, he was a part of like the Hitler Youth Organization or whatever. And as he got older, he started to realize the flaws of it and, you know, kind of questioned why he was a part of it, what should he do instead. And thus, he and a couple of his good friends at medical school, they decided to form the White Rose, which was obviously an anti-Hitler regime kind of ordeal. And, you know, at first, it was just him and his friends. Eventually, his sister, Sophie, wanted to participate. And with hesitation, he respectfully wanted her to be a part of it. And yeah, so that's essentially my character. I'm kind of the guy that started it all, pretty much.
Yeah, you absolutely are. One thing that was in the narration originally and got edited out for time, but is the fact that Hans Scholl not only was a member of one of the kind of Hitler Youth organizations, if you will, but he was a very honored, decorated one. I mean, he was like an officer in that group, and so he was really, really important. I mean, he didn't just kind of go along lackadaisically. He threw heart and soul into it, but as you said, really grew disillusioned quickly and distanced himself more and more, and eventually became an ardent opponent of Adolf Hitler. Tell our listeners about who you share the stage with besides your sister Sophie, who actually is the last character that we meet through the course of the opera. Ahead of that, who are you sharing the stage with?
Yeah, so my other, I guess, castmates are, their characters are Willy, Alexander, and
Christoph,
that's right, yeah. And Willy is played by Nathan Kollert, and Alexander is played by Hayden Izumi, and Christoph is played by Thomas Haugen. And the four of us are the guys that put all this together. We have this wonderful moment where we sing about the 12 cranial nerves and, you know, to kind of express how good of a friends we are.
And just studying as medical students.
Exactly, yeah. And then, you know, during that scene, I kind of have this grip with reality where the pains and the struggles of Stalingrad in the war kind of got to me, and I've just had this moment of clarity on what I have to do, and I have to do something to kind of put an end to this regime. It's a very moving moment.
And of course, these three classmates of yours or schoolmates, they elect to join you. We should maybe clarify that Hans Scholl was a medic in Stalingrad as that battle was raging, and what he saw there absolutely horrified him, and he realized that Germany was going to go down to certain defeat if they kept mindlessly following Adolf Hitler as they were. So yes, and this young man takes it upon himself. I don't think we've yet explained, Adam, why don't you explain exactly what this group of students did in terms of trying to oppose Hitler and foster some kind of resistance against him?
So what they did was they essentially wrote a series of leaflets and printed them off and disposed them throughout Munich and a few other cities nearby Munich. And eventually, when the sixth leaflet came out, it was spread everywhere. And I think in the script, we have it where the Allies also dropped the sixth leaflet down in Germany.
Right. Airdropped it as though you would, you know, drop, you know, little care packages or whatever. But yeah, these leaflets were actually dropped from Allied warplanes all over Germany and other parts of Europe.
Right. And, you know, because they were students, they, of course, had to take the time out of their day to study and do their, you know, everyday college activities. But in the night is where they really got hit the ground running with their White Rose activities with printing and distributing and all that sort of thing.
Absolutely. I think one of my favorite moments, Adam, from your performance, is the scene that you have with Rachel Jacine, who plays Sophie, your sister, and this moment. And just describe to our listeners what occurs in this scene.
So in this scene, I am confronted by Sophie, and she asks me if I've seen this leaflet from the White Rose. And at first, I kind of play it off safe. And I'm just like, yeah, I have. And I kind of act all innocent. But then she kind of starts to allude to the fact that she knows it's me. I just need to, like, confirm it for her. And I try to play it off innocent, but deep down I know that she knows. And then I finally give in and I tell her that it's me, but it's very secretive. Word should not be spread. And so Sophie does agree, but she wants to join it. And at first, as you probably hear musically, I'm very denying. I'm not allowing that to happen. And then Sophie kind of throws these words at me to kind of make me realize that, yeah, she does have a point. Maybe I will allow her to join the White Rose. So
right. And he grudgingly agrees, and she ultimately becomes a very important part of it. Mm-hmm. And so on. Well, we're not going to give away the ultimate ending.
Yes.
But I do want to have each of you talk about what it's like to be in a piece that is being written, in a sense, in the moment and also for you, and just kind of what it's like. I know, Adam, you've had this experience somewhat, mm-hmm. although what the new thing you were in had already been written, was kind of rewritten a bit for when you were in there. But Lily, for you, is this a first to be part of a piece that is being created in the moment?
This is definitely a first. I've never been a part of a project that has been created with the composer in the room. It's definitely different for me, and I love the experience because the composer knows the strengths and the weaknesses of the cast and amplifies their strengths, which I appreciate, which, like as I mentioned earlier, I don't have much experience in opera, but I am a theater performance major, so I narrate most of it, and I really enjoy it.
Right. And, of course, you do some singing as well.
I do.
And I should think that's kind of an interesting experience for you, someone who is already quite an experienced actor on the stage, but not necessarily experienced with singing rather than speaking.
Yes.
So what's that been like?
It's definitely been a process. I'm still trying to get the notes because with my musical background in cello, I know how the notes should sound. It's just getting them out of my mouth. That's the hard part.
Well, and I so appreciate the fact that, as you offer what amounts to narration through the course of this, that you're doing that with such assurance and such expressiveness, and it feels like there are certain moments when you are caught up in this story in the way that we want the character to be, but mm-hmm. that you are yourself as well personally.
Right, exactly. As the action is going on stage, I'm very moved by what is going on, and most of the time it also reflects on what the characters are feeling as well.
Right. So Adam, you were earlier in one of your previous experiences with Opera Workshop, you were in something called Birds of a Feather, a sequel to The Magic Flute that I composed. But this is a first for you in terms of being part of the creative process itself. So what has that been like for you?
It's definitely been interesting. I, like Lily said, I've never been involved in a project where a project like this has been worked on during the class. And it's definitely been rewarding because I get to experiment with how I execute some phrases and sing some notes and all that. And obviously we've made a few changes, but we've adapted to them very quickly and very well. And this has definitely been the workshop performance that feels the most theater-esque to me, or at least the theater flame in my body has been lit up the most. It feels the most theater to me. And I respect that, and I like that a lot. And obviously, it's also important to keep in my mind, at least, that I'm paying homage to the people that really experienced this however many years ago and really kind of respect what they did and how they got to where they were, and the legacy that they cemented into human history.
Right. I think one of the coolest things about this story is that you and your castmates are playing people who are of a comparable age to you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had lived 80 years ago when these events took place, I mean, you know, then the question becomes, what role would you have played? What would you have tried to do in the midst of such trying circumstances? So the opera receiving its world premiere this Saturday night is Courageous Rose, a story of student resistors in the time of Hitler. And we should mention that the evening actually begins with some opera arias and scenes. Adam, you're doing two fun arias, aren't you?
Yes, yes. The first one I'm doing, well, we haven't really confirmed which ones we're doing first, but one of them that I'm doing is Largo al Factotum, and it's from The Barber of Seville. And, you know, if you hear the title, you'll probably think, oh, what's that one? But it's a very well-known aria if you hear the notes. And it's been very fun learning this. And it's been fun reading what the words mean and how fun of a character I get to play. And the second aria that I'm doing is Non più andrai. And essentially I'm singing about the pros and the cons of going to war to Cherubino. And that one's also very lighthearted, but also very funny aria as well.
Absolutely. And you get to sing it to Lily, who's portraying Cherubino in the recit before, and she listens and responds as you sing that. And I should think for a theater major, that's an interesting and fun challenge.
It's super fun. It's super fun. Especially because I don't understand the language, so I'm kind of guessing with the actions Adam's giving me and following along. It's a process, and I really enjoy it.
Great. So you are actually part of two of these opera scenes and arias in part one of the performance on Saturday night. It's in the recital hall at Carthage, and admission is free. So Lily Lurigan and Adam Blackwood, two of the students performing this Saturday evening in the Fall Opera Workshop at Carthage College. I appreciate both of you being here for this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you.
And part two of the morning show is coming up in just a moment here on WGTD. We welcome you back to the Wednesday morning show here on WGTD, and in part two of today's program, we are talking about a brand new musical about to be performed this weekend out at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, part of their Fresh Ink Musical Workshop series. The musical is called Burn, a folk musical, and I am very happy to have with me on the phone Rachel Schwartz, who is a member of the theater faculty at Parkside and the director of this production. And we're going to be finding out a bit about Fresh Ink and specifically this show that sounds to be incredibly interesting and also incredibly timely. Rachel Schwartz, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Hi, Greg. Thank you so much for having me over again.
And remind me, when you were last on the morning show, what production were we talking about?
Spring Awakening, which
I
directed last April and May.
Very good. And now you're back with Burn, the musical. Before we talk about this specific show, tell us a bit about this Fresh Ink Musical Workshop series? I mean, I realize you're relatively new to Parkside, but hopefully you can give us a bit of historical perspective on that.
Absolutely. So this is year four for me over at UW Parkside, and I can give you the perspective about the workshop series, as it was something that that I created upon joining the faculty. Now, the Fresh Ink series, yeah. So the Fresh Ink series itself has existed for a long time, and it has traditionally been a space for student directors, student actors, designers, and technicians to spend a week working a new, brand new piece of theater to then put that up as a staged reading, oftentimes giving space for student directors to get that critical first opportunity. So when I wanted to create the new musical theater workshop series at Parkside, my goal was to model it after the new musical theater programs at both Millikan University as well as my alma mater, Baldwin-Willis, that gives space for creative teams that are creating new musicals to have a safe and supportive space to bring a script in whatever state it happens to be, and to support that team through taking it to its next stage in its journey, through whether it's audience feedback or creative collaborative feedback, to give them that space. That way, that musical can continue to grow and develop while also providing, again, those student actors the opportunity to share in that creative process, as well as student technicians and designers to get their hands in that, you know, lower stakes off the main stage season, but also, you know, on something that is new and we don't know where it is going to go. And that's really thrilling. So... I wanted to bring that aspect to Parkside as part of the growing musical theater concentration.
Fantastic. I vividly remember the first conversation I had about Parkside's Fresh Ink series. That was with somebody by the name of Dean Yonk, who was a member of the theater faculty for some time. And it was under his auspices that began. And I remember just being jealous because I loved the name and I just loved the idea so much. And it's interesting, there's something very similar at Carthage where I teach in the theater department, the New Play Initiative. And it's so exciting to think about students being exposed to brand new works in the midst of their creative process. It should be a part of every young person's theatrical education. And so it's great that Parkside has afforded so many of its students this opportunity over the years. So tell us what the process is like in terms of figuring out what the next thing will be, the next project, and then specifically tell us about how Burn, the musical, entered the picture of the Fresh Ink Musical Workshop series.
Absolutely. So this is almost comical, but in looking for new creatives, I spent a lot of time on TikTok and Instagram. So that is where I initially found Patrick and Mason, the two creatives behind Burn. So, you know, as you look for folks that are wanting to share content and that, you know, those theatrical works are in those infancy stages, but you can hear the music, you can see kind of the brand of the creative artist that's coming in behind it. So that's honestly where where this all began. I spent a lot of time in January and February last year seeking artists on TikTok and Instagram, which is comical, right?
Wow.
But it is it is where so much new work in the musical theater industry is sitting right now, waiting to be found. So I then, you know, I found this piece, and I found, you know, through as well my colleagues that were sifting and looking. You know, I got tipped off to Patrick and Mason, and they had some of their demos recorded and up on Instagram. And the music is just fantastic. And I went, okay, so here's this piece. It's not yet been put on its feet as far as staging at that juncture in time. You know, the music is stunning because it's folk. It's something that I know our students aren't regularly singing, so it'd be a vocal challenge. I saw some of the kind of themes worked in the piece, and I found it hyper-relevant. The characters were younger, so I went, okay, I think we have something. So I shot one of the creatives an email and said, hey, this is who I am. My hope is to workshop your piece. I would love to talk to you and your team. If this is something that could help you along the process, I'd love to provide that space and ask the questions of what do you need right now and how can we help in order to give that musical further legs and life beyond us, as well as to give our students the opportunity to work on something that is in process and to talk to creatives about how new musicals are born and the way they take shape over time and how they change. And I was thrilled to get a response. And then I met with Patrick and Mason, the creatives behind the show. And then I met with the producing team that has now picked up the piece. And everyone agreed that that this was a safe space for them to put this piece on its feet again, to, you know, try out some changes that had been made since they first workshopped it. It got its first production in July of this year. They did script revisions up through October. We got the script in early October to begin rehearsals at the end of October. So it's, you know, when I say fresh, I mean we're talking fresh. The guitar book for the piece has existed since 1014. So some aspects of it are weeks old. So, you know, truly giving them the space and the asks of what do you need was kind of the process in getting this up and rolling.
Hmm. I know from visiting the website of Mason Emmert, who I think he's one of the two creators of Burn, the musical, the folk musical, that he is a very young person. I mean, I'm gleaning from his biography, I'm guessing he's in his mid-20s at the oldest, or I mean, quite young.
Yeah.
And I'm suspecting with not a whole lot of experience when it comes to full-length staged works. What has it been like to collaborate with somebody so young and relatively inexperienced, but with so much talent?
So, you know, Patrick and Mason, so Mason Emmert and Patrick Dean Greeley are the two creatives behind this. And Burn came out of, they were paired together for a class assignment at their graduate program of Berkeley NYC in their new musical theater master's program. And initially wrote a singular song and went, wait, we've got something here. You know, and then that singular song turned into a rough of a musical, which then they did at Showcase, which then turned into a script. So, I mean, none of this, the first song for this piece was written in 2021. So we are really on kind of the new end of new, which is really thrilling. As far as them being young, I mean, what I think is really marvelous is that, you know, they speak the language of my students. So as far as writing characters that my students identify with, as well as discussing issues that my students identify with, that is just a boon. You know, and while they are new to, this is their first full-length piece together, you know, they're both experienced in working in the American theater industry, and incredibly well trained. So I want to emphasize that new to musical creation, they've got an incredible pulse on the business and what it should be and what stories should be told. And I treasure most how young they are in that I think that this is the first of many works for this team, and I look forward to witnessing much more to come from them.
Right.
That is a privilege to
to make such a wonderful acquaintance so early in their creative processes.
Right. Well, and to know that you are doing something very significant to perhaps foster what has the promise of being two really successful careers. You mentioned the workshop, using it as a verb, that you were offering to workshop Burn, the folk musical, and it has already been workshopped once before. Real quick, explain to our listeners who might be unacquainted with that concept, what does it mean to workshop a show?
Oh, what a great question. So that means that we are in dialogue with the creative team. So saying, you know, for example, something that we have been working on is with the new development of the guitar book. So for this show, the composer has played every other iteration of this himself. So this is the first time getting it onto paper. So then to look at that and go, okay, as this goes out in future iterations, how do we make this as accessible to other theaters and theater artists as humanly possible? You know, and then looking at it of going, all right, so if we raise this a whole step, then we don't need a guitar in this tuning, you know, as an example of, you know, and then asking questions of, okay, in this moment in the script, what do you mean by this? All right, this is a moment where we're having a tough time, or rather, you know, the inverse of that, this moment right here is so resonant and it's so beautiful. How do we flesh this out? So it's producing a work in conversation with the creatives behind it, as opposed to so often when I direct, you know, many of the pieces I would never have the privilege of speaking with, of asking the questions of providing the feedback to the creatives who made it. You know, many times we're working on, you know, works by theater artists who are long lost. So instead, we are in the process of having conversations that can help the work to shape and continue. Mm. In its last workshop process, the goal was to ask questions of the audience of what did they see, what was working, what was not working, to influence the next draft. Their goal in this iteration was to speak to the musicians, to myself, and to our actors of what's working, what's not working, what's working great, what's working so well that there should be more of it, you know, those sort of questions in order to help guide and shape what is to come.
Very good. It's an exciting thing for them and of course, for your cast as well. I love the title, Burn, the folk musical. So explain to our listeners about this story set in rural Northern California and why that title of Burn is so appropriate.
Sure. So Burn, within the context of the title, has a duality in its meaning, both in that wildfires shape the culture of Northern California life in such a profound way, and wildfire is almost an inherent character within this story, though it is not a story of fear and disaster and terror in that way, which, you know, surely could have been, but also Burn in reference to, this is about a pot community, to be completely transparent. So, you know, a community that is largely based on around the cannabis industry. So, so there is a double meaning there in regards to the wildfire, as well as the industry that made these people make this place their home. Mm. That to me was a brilliant play as far as the title, you know, and it has such an echo about it. It's really lovely. So,
Another term you used earlier in talking about workshopping this very, very new work was you used the term safe space. And, you know, that's terminology that gets used quite a lot in a lot of different ways. Explain the sort of safety that you are talking about, the safety, if you will, that you offered to Mason Emmert and Patrick Dean by agreeing to take this on.
Sure, and apologies that my cat decided to join us in the office for the second there, so she
no problem.
Continues to contribute to the interview. My apologies. Yeah, so in discussion of that use of that word in this context, what I mean by that is that, you know, we're coming at this text and this musical in this moment with the recognition that, A, of all, it is a work in process, that we understand that it is a piece in draft, that our goal is to be collaborative and to help guide it and support it. I talked to my cast about, like, working on a new work, whether it's a play or a musical, is somewhat like teaching a child, that there is, you know, we have ethics and morals in the way that we guide it and help it to grow, and we must do so with kindness. So that is the best way to guide it forward and to help it to move in the direction that we hope that it would. So when I say that, I mean that we are providing, you know, we're providing a really great music director who is there to look at the score and to say, hey, this is how we can help to make this accessible to, you know, a theater that wants to pick this up. We've got musicians on the team that are looking at the books. We've got actors that are looking at the characters and saying, you know, again, with kindness and with excitement of this is working, this is what I need help with. So to understand that there's a great trust in sharing your creative work with folks, to then, you know, hand it back with good intentions and, you know, to put it in front of an audience who is excited to see something that is new and it is, you know, likely in a state that it'll never be seen again, and that, you know, it's in draft. So that space is really special for works that are in development, that are in process.
Well, it's so exciting that not only do your cast members have this opportunity, and musicians and crew, but the creators of this brand new work, and of course those who are going to come and see Burn, the folk musical, to see something in process as it first emerges. So explain to listeners exactly when and where this production is going to be taking place, and what people need to do if they want to experience this.
Absolutely. So Burn, just to give a quick pitch, it is a folk musical. It's a very acoustic rock sound, rather than country and Western, as that word can sometimes be used. It is at UW Parkside in the main stage of the Rita this Friday and Saturday night at 7 p.m. Tickets are free, and folks need to just simply show up in order to enjoy and take part in the work. It is a really fantastic piece about community, about families, about the spaces that we love and the people that we care about within them. Kind of the central character of this place is the, you know, a town dive bar. And I think that most of us have spent some time knowing and loving, you know, our communities in spaces akin to that. So it's got such marvelous heart, and in order to see it, they've just got to simply come, which I think is best of all, in that, you know, we get to share the work at no cost to the community.
Right. And exactly when again?
Yeah.
And exactly when again?
Friday. Yes, sir. Friday and Saturday at 7 p.m.
Very good. In the main stage of the Rita. And Rachel Swartz, the director of this production of Burn, a folk musical by Mason Emmert and Patrick Dean. Rachel Swartz, it's been great to talk with you again, and thank you for all of the information you've shared about this really exciting project at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. Best wishes to you and everybody involved with Burn.
Thank you so much, Greg. Great to chat with you again.
All right. Bye-bye. The time is 8:58 here on WGTD, and tomorrow on the morning show, a couple of different interviews, including one with a faculty colleague of Rachel Swartz at UW Parkside, namely Alvaro Garcia, who is the director of orchestral activities there. And this weekend there will be a concert that features the Parkside Orchestra playing some of the thrilling music of the Star Wars film franchise. This has become quite a fun tradition at Parkside, and we'll be talking about that tomorrow. And on Friday, a conversation about AI or artificial intelligence, which with Max S. Bennett, the author of an absolutely fascinating book called A Brief History of Human Intelligence. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. You'll find The Morning Show archived on our website, WGTD.org. Today is going to be a cloudy day with showers, possibly even a thunderstorm. A high today of 52 degrees, overnight low of 39 degrees. It does look like we will have dry weather tomorrow as well as Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Daytime high right around 50 degrees, so bundle up. You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake